dia, boa tarde! Welcome to another episode of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. I'm your guest host, John Neves, back here again to talk about my favorite subject, your favorite subject, and that is, of course, Portuguese soccer, Portuguese football, whatever word you use in your part of the world. Episode 123. Glad to be back. Here we are in the month of June. It's all about transfer activity, loans, rumors, silly season. And I'm going to be talking about a lot of Portuguese players, as well as players that play in Portugal, being on the move, the ones that are going to possibly be coming in. And I'm going to be going through a lot of players here in a few minutes. Also going to give a final comment regarding Portugal national team. Disappointing loss at Switzerland, but there is one little bright spot to the final two matches in September, and I'll share that with you here in a few minutes. Want to give you also an update on my small club, Atlético dos Arcos. Not very good news. Also, and I really hope you do listen to the end of this podcast, I want to talk to you about my experience last weekend with the Dia de Portugal festivities. I got a chance to go visit a sporting club and a Benfica club in Newark, and also got a chance to check out the parade on Sunday in Newark, where Porto had a very good float, as did Benfica. And I'll talk to you a little bit about my experiences from a football soccer standpoint about going with Dia de Portugal, because everybody is wearing their own, you know, kits. Porto, Benfica, Sporting, Portugal, although Portugal overwhelmingly. So I'm going to share with you some of my experiences of what I did last week. So those are some of the things I'll be talking about in a podcast that I don't know if it's going to be as long as it usually is. But it's been, my schedule has been pretty busy, but I wanted to drop one this weekend. But let's get going talking about the transfer window. And obviously this week, a lot of activity this week, particularly with Futebol Clube do Porto. I'm an Arsenal fan. And, you know, I watch Arsenal Fan TV, AFTV, as they're called now. And I think a lot of people, including that show and including in the press, were pretty caught off guard regarding Fabio Vieira and Arsenal. Pedro Sepulveda, who's like the Portuguese Fabrício Romano, he's the one that reported it. And apparently it is true, 35 plus 5 in bonus objectives, add-ons. And as a result, they, you know, we all knew that Fabio Vieira potentially could have been moved, but it was really Vitinha that was getting a lot of the news. And this came out of nowhere. There was no, as tends to happen with the Portuguese press, where for a few weeks you're teased about this, you're teased about the interest, negotiations, and then when you have a few days of no progress, you hear, they're getting closer. This one just happened out of the blue. It reminds me of when André Silva was sold to AC Milan. It just kind of came out of the blue, out of nowhere. And for me, number one, I like the idea of him going to Arsenal. I think he has a chance to contribute. If Fabio Vieira had stayed in Porto for one more year, I think across all competitions, he would have scored anywhere from 12 to 15 goals. And next summer, instead of leaving for 35 and 5, he could have probably left for at least 50. But the economics, the way they are, and the offer, after all, Fabio Vieira is a youth product, so he's already a Porto product. And, you know, taking a youth product, especially one that won the UEFA Youth League, somebody that helped Porto win the championship this season, someone that led the under-21 last summer to the under-21 finals, where unfortunately we finished runner-up. This is a young kid, a young midfielder who has a lot of potential, and I think he could do very well at Arsenal, which is trying to take an approach of bringing in some very good young players. Now, is he going to solve all of Arsenal's problems? No. Is he going to contribute? Absolutely. I don't know if he's going to become a superstar. We'll know that better after his first season if he has that potential, but Fabio Vieira is a surprising move, but I think it's one that's a very, very good move. And I have to tell you, I would love to have been a fly on the wall when Sergio Conceição got the phone call about this deal. And Conceição has always spoken about it, that, you know, he wants the team to remain intact as much as possible. He realizes there are going to be a few sales. But at the end of the day, you know, he wants to keep as many of the players possible because he's made it very clear that he wants to compete in Europe. You know, he just doesn't want to just come in and kind of start all over. But I would have loved to have heard in that 24-hour news cycle when first it was Fabio Vieira, Arsenal, and then Vitinha being reported to PSG, man, I would have liked to have been in that room with Conceição to see what he had to say, because I can't imagine he would have been too happy. Although, of course, we don't know what the power structure is behind the scenes, whether or not he could veto those moves. I don't know. My gut feeling based on everything I've read is probably no. But, hey, two very big moves with Porto this week, and Vitinha going to PSG. I personally think Vitinha is going to be a great player, but I still think he should have stayed in Porto for another year. But again, the reports are that PSG is going to trigger the release clause, and $40 million for a young prospect like that is a great, great deal for Futebol Clube do Porto. But on the other hand, you're losing two very good Portuguese players. A lot of Porto fans are not very happy because they feel that not just with Diaz and Fabio Vieira, but a lot of people, with Diaz and then Fabio Vieira and now Vitinha, a lot of people felt that Porto maybe didn't sell these players for how much they really should have been sold for. But I talked about this back in January, and this is why I love doing a podcast, because so many things that I talk about come back again, and I could resort to having a history of saying this over and over again. But, you know, if you remember back in January when all the talk was about Diaz, initially it was Tottenham. And then, as we know, Liverpool came along, and they were basically the ones that got Diaz. I think one, according to The Athletic, not only was the offer really good by Liverpool, but also that Liverpool paid Porto $7 million right away. And I said that, you know, unless you work inside the club, you don't know how difficult the financial situation is. And a lot of times that does dictate why you have to make moves. Because remember, Porto didn't qualify for the Champions League knockout stages. And that's a lot of money they lost to have to go to the Europa League, which is much smaller. And then obviously didn't even make it out of Europa in the knockout stage when they went to play. So it's you know, and by the way, Conceição also said, and again, he said this, go look it up, that, you know, when he was asked about Diaz, the first match, post-match, I think it was in the Dragon, and he was asked about the Diaz transfer. And he wasn't too thrilled about it, but from a competitive standpoint, you know, it's not good. But he realized that basically the financial interests were more important with that move than the competitive interest. He said this. And I think here that's pretty much the case as well, because when clubs wind up selling players, you know, they're doing it obviously for economic reasons. And again, I've been saying this now for a few years, that Portuguese clubs have to sell to reinvest that money back in the club. Even though they make, especially the big three, make sales on tickets, which, you know, if you're getting 40 to 50,000 in the house, that's some pretty decent money. But at the end of the day, this is just the way it works. But a lot of Porto fans, I always like to gauge the feelings of my cousins in France through WhatsApp, and they're very unhappy. They felt that Porto should have done a lot better to get a lot more money, but here we are. And I think this talks to, even though I believe Porto's out of financial fair play regulations, I think this really speaks to the financial situation of the club. And again, people can be very angry, but at the end of the day, there's a reality here that Portuguese clubs need to make these sales, and we'll see what Porto does. Will they bring in anybody with some of that money that they're going to make? We have to wait and see. But my only thing also with Vitinha going to PSG is, you know, massive club in terms of these days, a club that has not won the Champions League. There's a lot of pressure. Obviously, they have some fantastic players there. And, you know, he's already got two Portuguese players there, Danilo and Nuno Mendes, to help, you know, transition him to life in Paris. But, you know, a player like Vitinha is going to be a contributor. He's not going to solve the problems. We'll see if him and Fabio Vieira could become a superstar in the, you know, in these leagues. I don't know. But based on what we know today, we think that these players are going to be able to contribute. I think Fabio Vieira is in a better position right now, if you're an Arsenal fan, to contribute. And let's hope he does, because the last thing we want to see on Arsenal Fan TV, AFTV, is, you know, people just basically saying really bad things about him. Arsenal historically doesn't buy a lot of Portuguese players. At least, I mean, I know they had Cedric, and I know they got Tavares on loan, but generally Arsenal is not a name that usually is connected too much, at least with Porto players. And that was interesting to see that happen this week. So surprised about Fabio Vieira. Not so surprised about Vitinha. He had been in the news that he was going to be sold. But, you know, we'll see what happens with that. Darwin, great business for Benfica, although when you subtract Almeria, his prior club in second division Spain, are going to be getting about $10 million. You subtract the agent fees, the FIFA solidarity payments. It's still a good amount of money, but it's not necessarily 80 up front, which a lot of people think that is once you hear about a sale in the media. But, you know, no surprise with Darwin. But what I do find very interesting is we have not seen anything happening with Ricardo Horta. There have been some reports that Benfica first wanted to sell Darwin so that they could then take that money and start to put that money toward the use of getting some of the players that, you know, new manager Roger Schmidt wants. Because Roger Schmidt, again, per the media reports, has said that he wants to start preseason with everybody that's important to be there. Because, you know, in a month from now, when they do start preseason at the end of the month, let's not forget, they've got to start playing like they did last year, qualifying for the Champions League. So I'm surprised so far we haven't seen anything with regards to Ricardo Horta. You know, a lot of this money, by the way, when you do hear about it, let's say after everything is subtracted, the agents, Almeria, financial fair play, I think it's, I don't know off the top of my head, I think it might be something like $50 million. I don't know if it's necessarily something where Liverpool pays Benfica $50 million up front. I think it's usually something that's done in installments over a period of time. You know, a lot of times when you hear, it's like when you buy a house. I mean, nobody buys a house up front. You know, you buy a house over a period of time. You know, you pay a mortgage. And I think that's what happens here, where they're going to be paying these players over a period of time. But I'm still surprised that they have this money, that they haven't made a move for Ricardo Horta. And by the way, Braga is having a big say in Portuguese transfers because they're playing very tough with Benfica, who want Ricardo Horta, and Braga have made it clear they want 20, you know. And then you look at Porto, Sergio Conceição wants two center backs. And one of the center backs they're going after is David Carmo, who was called up for the first time to the Portuguese national team for the Nations League. You know, didn't see much action, but did get the call. He is a player that they're centering on, but Braga want $30 million. And, you know, $30 million for Porto is way out of their budget. According to the newspapers, Porto apparently offered Fernando Andrade and Leite, who was already at Braga this past year, on loan. But I got to be honest with you, if I'm, you know, Antonio Salvador and I get the phone call from Porto or the agent, whoever it may be that's doing the negotiating, and, you know, they say, I told them it was $30 million. Okay, what did they say? They said that's too much. But maybe they pay 15 and they give you Fernando Andrade and Leite. I mean, I can imagine Antonio Salvador probably just kind of looking at the phone like, did he just say that? I think Porto is going to have to do a little bit better than that if they want to get a player like David Carmo. I don't think giving up two players that at this point in time are probably not going to figure in preseason. I mean, they may start, but eventually the goal is to probably move them. Leite has some interest from, I think I've read Germany at the point in the past, and I think even in Turkey. But at the end of the day, I think it's going to be very curious to see, one, how Braga is being very tough in negotiations, which, by the way, is the way Porto, Benfica, Sporting are with the other clubs in Europe when they want their players. So Braga is just kind of doing to the big three, or in this case, Porto and Benfica, what those clubs have been doing to all the big clubs in Europe for many, many years. So if you're Braga, and the fact that they've held out already and, you know, they just haven't taken any offer for Ricardo Horta, this kind of shows you that, you know, Braga is not going to make it easy and that they're going to want to get their money. Because if Braga wants to compete, you know, they've been Portugal's fourth most successful club in the last 10, 12 years. They also need to be able to have success in the transfer market and get the value that they want for their players. Because if they're just going to give their players for the cheap, then they're never going to get to where they want to be. And they need to get into the game of making big sales, because making big sales is what's going to get them the opportunity to try to compete. Because El Salvador has said they want to win a title someday. You know, finishing second is nice. They tend to finish third or fourth. But their goal is to compete and to be a bigger club than they are. And this is a club that went to the quarterfinals last year. So very interesting what's going on with Ricardo Horta, that nothing has happened yet. And very interesting how Braga is playing hardball, really playing very tough with Porto on David Carmo and Ricardo Horta on Benfica. But again, if you're going to do it to the big clubs in Europe, well, what goes around comes around, as they say. And now Braga is doing it to these Portuguese clubs and really making it tough to get them. So we'll see what happens. And by the way, the domestic Portuguese record was, in terms of a Portuguese club buying a player, was Benfica, 24 million euros when they bought him. Darwin from Almeria, a second division club in Spain. If Carmo were to be sold to Porto for 30, that would be a record. But again, I just don't see how Porto is going to sell, spend 30 million. I really don't see it. Even though they have an influx of some of this money with Diaz, they also have a lot of bills to pay. And, so that's just, my opinion. Other players, João Palhinha. At one time, he was linked heavily with the Wolves. But now it looks like it's Fulham. I think they offered 18 plus 2 in objectives, but Fulham then went as high as just offering 20. Paulinho right now is on vacation, and apparently he's supposed to be heading to London next week. Fulham going back to the Premier League. When you play for Wolves, you've got that Portuguese element there, and that's probably something that he wanted to kind of get him acclimated. But you know what? Playing for Fulham in the London area, it's really not that bad. I don't think that's that bad of an opportunity. And, Fulham with Marco Silva, Portuguese manager there, they're really going to be trying to make it, very good, comfortable for him to become a important piece of the club. And by the way, he will be playing in the Premier League. So, Paulinho, I think everyone has already known that he's going to be the guy that's going to be sold. And I personally think, he is a little bit older. He's in his late 20s, but I think, 20 million is a very good deal for him. So I think that's a very interesting thing. Other thing with Sporting is Matheus Nunes. Apparently he hasn't agreed to personal terms yet with the Wolves, but he's another player that's being linked in England, particularly with Wolves, and it'd be a good situation for him to go, especially him being a national team player, to go for the Wolves, where there's already a number of national team players on the squad. But that's what's been reported by Fabrizio Romano. Goncalo Inacio was also reported getting English interest, but apparently the Wolves are not one of the clubs that are targeting him. Sporting's going to sell Paulinho. They may sell Matheus Nunes, but they're not also going to sell three players, the third being Goncalo Inacio. I really don't see that. I'm surprised we haven't heard more. I know he kind of had an off year compared to the previous years, when he did so well, and that is Pote. I'm surprised we haven't heard about Pote getting into the news a little bit more, but that just tells you that his star is kind of dim and that he didn't necessarily have the year because, obviously he was injured. But that also tells you the fact that Sporting just had so much more talent last year. But I'm surprised we haven't seen any talk about Pote, because the year before that, Pote was being mentioned by a lot of big clubs. And now all of a sudden, it just kind of disappeared. And that also goes to show you that a lot of times the agents will pick up the phone, they'll call their contacts at the newspapers, and they try to push ideas along. And this is one of the ones where, if he had really interest from the big clubs in Europe, it would have happened by now, at least in my opinion. Other players that are getting a lot of interest abroad, Renato Sanchez. He apparently has a personal agreement with Milan, but now PSG apparently is in for him, according to reports. He's done very well in France with Lille. He's very comfortable in France. A lot of Portuguese immigrants would support him in France. But, I was saying that a lot of people were surprised that Renato Sanchez wasn't selected for the Nations League squad list by Fernando Santos, because, he might have been basically worried about his, thinking more about his career and things like that. And we're kind of surprised that, that we haven't heard much more about Renato Sanchez, that he hasn't gotten it done at this point. And I think that's what kind of surprises me so far, that we haven't heard much about him. But PSG, another Euro giant, is interested in him. Is it a good fit? We'll see. Bernardo Silva has been linked with Barcelona. Is that a good move? I don't know. My only concern with Bernardo Silva is I think he's got a good thing going with City. City, like PSG, is under the pressure of not having won the Champions League. But Bernardo, at some point during the season, was one of the best players in the world. I don't think he's going to go to Barcelona and change them overnight. If I'm Bernardo, you know, unless you're doing it for money, knowing that when you transfer, you're going to make even more money, yeah, then I guess you make the move to the new camp. But if you're about trying to win a European title, I think it's better, you know, for him to stay and to try to win a European club title with City. Ruben Semedo, of course, was playing for Olympiacos with Pedro Martins, goes on loan to Porto, but Porto are not going to trigger his clause. And right now, Ruben Semedo apparently is getting interest from Saudi Arabia. Even Fenerbahce and JJ are possibly looking at him. When we look at other things going on in Portugal, you know, in terms of players that are going to leave and players that have already been sold, you know, Mbemba is leaving Porto on a free. We know about Darwin Nunez. Everton Cebolinha is going back to his native Brazil with Flamengo. A lot of video on social media of him arriving at the airport and meeting with the executives from Flamengo. It's a deal that's, I've read 12 and a half, could go up to 16, but now I've read it could go up to 17 and a half. You know, JJ, Jorge Jesus, when he was at Benfica, he really liked Everton Cebolinha. That was his player. He even talked about Everton when he was with Flamengo, and Everton was playing for another club. But Everton has just never really... He's never really panned out at Benfica, let's be honest. I know Everton Cebolinha's wife has been very critical of Benfica about their lack of support for the player. But, you know, whether she's right or not, this is big-time football, big-time soccer. Players, when a Portuguese club spends money on you, and any money they spend is meant to immediately make profit and to help you win. And when you don't do that in Portugal, this is what happens. You know, people are not going to like you that much. And, you know, maybe there's truth. But at the end of the day, you've got to produce. And I don't think that Everton Cebolinha produced last year. João Mário didn't produce last year. Some would say Yarmouchuk didn't produce last year. There are a lot of reasons why Benfica finished in third place last year. And one would say Everton Cebolinha just didn't play well enough to make that list. We talked about Fiabu Vieira. Lincoln, there was some talk linking him with Porto, but he's going to Fenerbahce with Jorge Jesus. Pedrinho is also going to go play in Turkey again. How many times have I done this podcast and you talk about the Turkish interest in Portuguese players? No matter how many times I say it, it continues to surprise me like it happens the first time. It is amazing the opportunities for Portuguese players in Turkey. And Turkish, they, you know, as I've said, they love their football. They love their soccer. And these players are going to a place, as JJ is going to find out with Fenerbahce real soon once they start playing, where they have a lot of passion. Lino left Gil Vicente. He's going to Atletico Madrid, although he's also been linked with Sporting. But like Lino and like Trincon, it's just been reported. Nothing has happened yet. But let's remember this. It is only the third week of June. Clubs start reporting in about 2 weeks for preseason. There's still a lot that could happen. And I still think Trincon, and I think maybe Lino's going to go to Sporting later on this summer, but it's not going to happen right now. Trincon is another Portuguese player that's been rumored to go to Sporting, but Barcelona, you know, who spent a lot of money on him, you know, don't want him to just go away, and they don't want to let him loan away with you know, not a great purchase option. They only want to make up their money. You know, Barcelona is not the Barcelona of 10, 15 years ago financially, where maybe they could afford to look the other way on a deal that didn't go right for 20, 30, 40 million. They got to count their pennies now. They got to be very, very careful. But Trincon is another player right now whose future is very undecided. But those are among the many, many players making news. And we're going to start to see in about another week and a half, clubs start to report. Benfica starts to report early. Rio Ave, Gil Vicente, especially all the clubs that got to get ready for a European competition. And then once clubs start to, you know, do their medicals and start to do some trainings, I think we'll start to see, you know, more movement. And, you know, that's how I think those things are going to work out. And by the way, one other thing that I wanted to say, going back to, you know, I talked about this briefly last week. I almost forgot this, but I'm glad I remembered it now to mention it. You know, people, be very careful about what you read on the internet or Twitter. There's been a lot of arguments between Porto and Benfica fans about the fact that Benfica make these big sales. A lot of people like to reference João Felix, and Porto is basically making these sales where they're not necessarily getting that big time money. I think I've seen some remarks make about how, Benfica sold João Felix for like 126 million. And then meanwhile, when you take the deals of Dias, Fabio Vieira, and Vitinha, it comes out to only 111 million for three very good players. Be very careful when you read those analogies. I think that that's very misleading. First off, João Felix, when he was sold back in the summer of 2019, that was 10 months before the pandemic started. Totally a different economy back then. Nobody saw the pandemic coming. Even though João Felix, a lot of people thought, that maybe Athletic overpaid for him. That was just a different time. Whereas now, you have a club like, Porto, who didn't make the Champions League knockout stages. They just got out of financial play. They've got to make money. I don't know if it's fair to make those comparisons. Darwin, 80 and 20. But let's just forget that there's a lot of involvement in that money, so Benfica's not necessarily going to be making 80. And in a way, the deals that Porto will make with Fabio Vieira and Vitinha might actually wind up being better in the long run than Darwin, especially if Darwin doesn't make his objectives. But my point is when you make these comparisons, especially when you're making a comparison from something that happened 3 years ago, be very careful, how you take that seriously, because different time, different economic area. Just be very careful. I hope some of you are smart enough not to read into those arguments that I see a lot on Twitter. But that's the transfer market. That's, Portuguese clubs have to sell. That's just the way it goes. And, it's a very important part. We'll see who comes in to replace a lot of these players. I'll talk about that more next week. But right now, there's a lot of Portuguese players. And I always say it's like a garden. These big clubs come in and they pick at your garden, and all of a sudden, by the time you're done, half of your garden is empty and you have to go back and plant the new seeds and start all over again. And that's just the way it goes in Portugal. Decisions sometimes have to be made for economic reasons. I got to tell you, there's a club in Portugal called Sporting Covilha. I'm probably not saying Covilha right. They're in the second division. They played the playoff with the third division team, and they won to stay in the second division. They just announced, just to tell you sometimes at the smaller clubs, the challenges, they can't afford to do preseason estágio, where they take the team, which is 30 to 35 players, and you're talking about staff, transportation, the structure, and you go away, let's say it's to the Algarve. Some clubs go up to the Minho region, and you're talking about putting people up in a hotel for 10 days, transportation, food. They can't even afford to do that. Here's a club in the second division that can't afford to do that. So they're going to have to do everything at home, and they're going to save a lot of money because they're basically not spending any money. But what happens in the top of Portugal is very different than what happens with 75% of the rest of the league. And clubs have to sell players to make that money, because even though the ticket deals in Portugal, they do sell tickets, the smaller clubs aren't making a whole lot of money, although it helps. And the TV money is just not as big as it is, because we just don't have that great interest like we do in other parts of the world. So very interesting thing with regards to some of the thoughts that I have on the transfer window. Part two of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. Welcome back. Here's my fast and furious section. A lot of news in Portugal. First off, a quick word about the national team. One Sunday we beat Switzerland 4-0. The next Sunday we lose to Switzerland 1-0, giving up a goal in the first minute. Very disappointing. I don't know exactly how we allow that to happen. But there's only one good thing about Portugal right now with the Nations League, and that is the fact that these two matches at the Czech Republic and then at home in Braga to Spain, we have to win in order to win the group and qualify for the final four next year. is the fact that we are playing two very important games that matter. And these are going to be the last two matches before the World Cup. And I guess if there's anything good about it is the fact that, you know, it's not like they've already won the group and now they could take it easy and experiment and do the change this and change that. No, they've got to play to win. And I think that having to play to win is a better way to prepare for the World Cup than just playing matches where they don't really mean anything because you've already taken care of your objective. Let's not forget that when the leagues, the EPL, Portugal, France, whatever, once they finish they halt their seasons in like that second week of November, clubs are only going to have like 7, 8, 9 days before they play their first World Cup game. So having the World Cup that later in the year doesn't mean that the clubs are going to have the chance for 3 week, you know, like they've done in the past, or 2 weeks to prepare. It's going to be a lot smaller. So that makes these two matches that are coming up very important in September because they really mean something. So we'll see what they do in Portugal. We'll see if Fernando Santos, I don't know what to say. I mean, we should have beaten Switzerland. Obviously, no Cristiano, no Moutinho. But Portugal dominated in the second half. Totally, totally dominated in the second half. Especially the numbers, 9 corners. I mean, we dominated. Took, I think, 17 shots in the second half. But, you know, at the end of the day, we used to say this about the golden generation. You know, you could do everything you can with your creativity with the ball. You could create 100 opportunities. But at the end of the day, what matters is who scores the goals. And you could be the best players on the pitch, have the most possession. But I think the game against Switzerland is an example where it don't matter what you do, you have to score. You know, taking these pretty shots and having them saved, but they're pretty shots, is nice. But at the end of the day, they don't mean anything if they don't go in. So I think that's the only good thing I see about it. And I think also we need to start getting ready for a future without Cristiano. And obviously, you know, does Cristiano make a difference? I think he does. But after this World Cup, we really have to start thinking about the future without Cristiano. I still think he's going to stick around for the next World Cup coming to North America. I really believe it. But Portugal also needs to start preparing. And I'll talk about that more in a future episode. A few other things. Benfica, there was some possibility that Benfica might play Fenerbahce and Jorge Jesus in the third preliminary round. Not going to happen. Both of those teams, Benfica and Fenerbahce, they did the draw for the second preliminary round. And the way it came out with the seeding, they will not be playing each other. So that would have been great to see JJ and Fenerbahce play Benfica, the way we saw JJ play Spartak Moscow and Rui Vitória last year. I think that would have added some juice to the Champions League preliminaries, but that's not going to happen. Braga, you know, preseason, Braga has announced they're going to play Middlesbrough, Nice, and Celta Vigo. Fulham and Marco Silva are going to come to Portugal to play at Estoril. Of course, Marco Silva managed at Estoril early in his career. That's what gave him the big opportunity, so not really a surprise to seeing Fulham playing Estoril. July the 1st is a lot of preseason dates for clubs. Porto in less than 2 weeks is going to start training. Same thing with Benfica and Sporting's already. They're going to be going back down to the Algarve. So in about 2 weeks or so, things are going to start to really, really get going. Vitória Guimarães discovered the Europa Conference second preliminary round opponent. It's a team from Hungary. Puskas Akademika, first match at home on July the 21st, second match away. And as always, of course, we're supporting our Portuguese teams abroad. JJ and Fenerbahce, Portuguese Bruma is going to them on loan. So Fenerbahce and JJ got Lincoln. Now they got Bruma. JJ starting to put his touches with Fenerbahce. José Gomes, Portuguese manager. He was in Portugal for a while. I think he managed at one time in Marítimo. He's been hired at second division in Spain with SD Pontoferrina. Varzim has a new manager, a 33-year-old youngster that a lot of people are very high on, Thiago Machado. And Belenenses, who I believe now is up to the third division, they've hired Bruno Dias as their new manager. I said this was going to be short, but it's not. So let me just end it with, first off, Athletico dos Arcos, my hometown team in the districts, the fifth division. Unfortunately, they did do the playoff last Friday on Dia de Portugal. By the way, I complained why they were playing on Friday at 1700, but that's because that was Dia de Portugal that day, so my mistake there. But they lost. They lost the playoff to Monção. They were losing 3-0 after 28 minutes. They made a bit of a comeback in the second half, got as close as 3-2, almost had a chance to level. And for like the third time in like 6 years, it's just not going to happen. There's been nothing but bad luck with this club. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, they were in the third division. The third division that year said that, you know, they were restructuring the lower divisions, that the bottom five would get relegated. They were the fifth of those five teams, barely, but nevertheless, they were at the bottom five. They got relegated. Any other year where it's just the top two or three, they stay in the third division. Bad luck. A few years ago, they lost in the playoff on a 92nd-minute PK, stuck in the, you know, the districts. And now again, you cannot give up 3 goals in the first 28 minutes and think that you're going to compete to go up to the fourth division. And unfortunately, they lost, so it's another year. But even though I'm always still going to be rooting for them, and we'll do this again next year, I am happy that the club that I have adopted as my second division team, because of a lot of, they come from my family, well, one of my family's hometown, and that's Torres Vedras Turians, a club that has, they re-signed a lot of their players. Their Instagram account has been very busy, but they're going to be back with a lot of their players, a lot of their nucleus from this past year, including their manager, Nuno Matos Santos. But they are back. So next year, you're going to hear a lot about me talk about Atlético do Arcos, hopefully next year getting to that fourth division. But you're also going to hear me talk about Turiarense in the second division, and I'm hoping to catch a match if I'm able to get to Portugal in the month of August. I'm going to wrap it up here, my experiences with Dia de Portugal. First off, I want to send a special thank you to Cristiano Oliveira. I've had Chris on my podcast about 2 months ago. He was on also last year twice. When I think about Benfica, he's the guy that I go to because his opinion matters. And I was very happy this week. Talk Sport, BBC, a number of radios. You know, when you think about Benfica, that's the guy you want to talk to, especially if you want to talk to somebody on a radio station professionally. And I was very happy for him. But last Saturday, I went to Newark, New Jersey, big Portuguese population. And my day started off with, I met up with Chris. I went to the sporting club, Lares de Leões. I think it was my third time that I'd been there. It was Dia de Portugal. There was no big festival on Ferry Street. So what happens is a lot of restaurants, a lot of clubs. Basically, they do their own thing in their, you know, parking lots, their whatever open space. So my day kind of began there, and I had a chance to see this place, the trophies, to see the decorations on the wall. They really did some nice paintings of some of their best players in history, Figo, Sapinto. It was very nice. I thought the one they painted of Figo was very good. Whoever painted that really did a good job. And, I always love to go. You know, when I go to Portugal, I go to the museums of the clubs, even though I've been there before. I do the same thing whenever I'm in a Portuguese area. If I hear about a local club, Sporting, Porto, Benfica, whatever, I like to go and check it out and spend my money having a meal there and buying a drink. And so we started off there, and then afterwards we walked for about 15 minutes, and we went to the Benfica Casa. A little bit bigger place. They had an outdoor place where they had a whole thing going with the band. Sporting Lares de Leões had a DJ, very good DJ. But Benfica's club, which was about a 15-minute walk away, they had a band, a big place outdoors to eat. Went inside to get some drinks and some, you know, later on at night, some espresso coffee. And it was good. It was good to be, you know, there was not just Benfica fans there. There was obviously Porto fans. I noticed this well with the sporting club Lares de Leões. But it was a night about celebrating Dia de Portugal with other Portuguese and enjoying the farturas and the bifanas and the wine. And, you know, and it was funny. Like, when I walked into the Benfica club, they had their TVs on, and they were showing replays of Benfica's basketball team winning the best of five championship series against Porto at Porto. And it was kind of funny because I think at the time Golden State and the Celtics were playing. But, yeah, you went into the Benfica club, of course. And they're showing that game. And I thought, like, yeah, of course, this is the Benfica club. This is what you're going to go see. But I really enjoyed visiting the club and being shown around and checking it out, because sometimes these clubs are very private. So it's not like you can just walk off the street and go in. But really want to give a shout out. I've had people ask me about the Porto club. My understanding is there's no Porto club, at least not lately, in Newark. It goes without saying that if there was, I would have been there by now, but I did not get a chance to see it. And that's what I've been told, and you know, I've looked it up. There is an address that comes up, but they tell me it's not right. I don't know. But if you're a Porto fan and you live in Newark and you have information, feel free to share with me, and I'll be happy to share it in the next episode with any Porto fans that you know, are listening. And then I came back on Sunday for the parade. Porto, I thought, had by far the best float, the best activity of the parade. Obviously, they won the title this year. Benfica also had a very good thing going with a lot of music. I did not see, unless I missed it, I did step away for about 10 minutes, the Lars de Leonge float. I don't know if I missed it. It was weird going to the parade because that Sunday there was a threat of a bunch of thunderstorms, heavy rain. It never happened, thankfully, but you know, it and the parade, I don't know if the parade is as big as it used to be, but I didn't get a chance to see the sporting. But I thought, in my opinion, the Porto float, and I've got video of it, and I'm hoping to put it up on the PortugueseSoccer.com YouTube, a video of everything, you know, coming up real, real soon. Anyway, folks, glad to be back talking about our favorite topic, and that is, of course, Portugal. A lot of news. It's all about the agents. It's all about the sports directors. It's all about the presidents basically making decisions on the future of their players. Braga playing hardball. Benfica, Sporting Porto, trying to sell their top players. How will this all play out? We're going to find out soon enough. And obviously, I'll be back next week to talk about it a little bit more. Folks, thanks as always for your support. Again, the numbers just continue to grow. Ran into somebody at the Benfica House, was very complimentary about the podcast. So I want to say a quick hello to you, know who you are. And as always, I'll be back next week, and we'll do it again. Ciao, everybody.